information you need now. News Radio 560 KPQ.
This is The Agenda from News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern affecting you are open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
Good afternoon, 12:15, 62 degrees outside. Our palatial radio studios here in downtown Wenatchee, Michael Knight, and the show is called The Agenda. Thanks for listening. If you are listening with even one ear, please consider this. Does anyone or can anyone know the future? Which? Or both? Or neither? When we take a wild guess at the future, it always seems to include flying cars, unlimited glass skyscrapers stretching to the horizon, one-piece jumpsuits for everyone, and extremely ugly shoes. That's the future. Jumpsuits and another high-rise. Everything is clean and beautiful in our artist's rendering of life and customs in the glistening days that may be in the future. No one is poor. No one is sick. No one in the picture is homeless. No one lives on the sidewalks and cast off REI equipment. Just a pristine super parkway, wide open urban control centers with big streets and big corporate footprints and big horizons and big clean things all over a big clean downtown. Busy clean people are busy in their jumpsuits, walking purposefully from one city center celebration to the next. It's a busy, clean future. What about crime? Does it get worse? Not in the future. Is the rent too high? No, not in the future. Shortages, price gouging? No, not in our future. Healthcare, bank regulations, college loans? Simply not in the future, ladies and gentlemen. Changes in the weather? Nope. Ugly shoes and jumpsuits? Yes, unfortunately. Unbelievably ugly shoes and ridiculous jumpsuits will be mandatory in the future. And complaints, I should have mentioned it, will be forbidden. So just settle your mind before you leave your home in your jumpsuit. We're tracking you in your suit and also your emotion beacon. Opposition to the wonderful future has been ironed out, and if you have anything to say, my advice is just don't. Besides, some people like jumpsuits, which are an historical homage to those embarrassing denim leisure suits. If you don't know what a denim leisure suit is, just thank your lucky stars. I'm telling you, we've been there. We've done that. We don't need to do it again in the future. It harkens back to 1978, and who needs that? So now let's meet the real man from the future. Steve Maher looks pretty good in a one-piece zipper front pastel fiber future activity ensemble. Or as we call them in the innocent year, 2019, a jumpsuit. Steve Maher, thanks so much for being with us. It's taken a while for us to get together.
Yeah, thank you for having me here. And that's quite a description of what I think you're describing as utopia.
It's the utopia land at Disney World, right?
Right.
It's like Anaheim is ugly from one end to the other, but there's four square blocks of the future that Disney put together, and they're fabulous. The one thing about the future that you've learned probably better than anybody else in town is that you think it's in the future, but it's not a constant. It just won't stay there. Pieces of it come and say hello to us, and pieces just disappear.
Yeah, and that's, you know, where our value, our future, the community development initiative is coming from, is that you can't, you know, necessarily predict the future, but you can prepare for it. And that's a lot of what we do is doing that work, bringing people together to, you know, make this a more resilient place.
As we mentioned off the air, some people don't like to know that the future is coming. It's like talking about your own death. Well, I know it's coming, but I don't want to discuss it now. Here comes the future, whether we want to discuss it or not. Which part of the future that you started talking about 5 years ago is already here?
You know, I think we're seeing probably the biggest thing is just the collaboration that I think was always inevitable. You know, it's one community here. We've got a river that I guess in some ways divides us, but it's always been viewed as one community. And I think over the last few years, we're increasingly seeing folks accept that. One of the interesting things I've noted, you know, I come from a journalism background. I was at the Wenatchee World for a long time. And
I know some cops in town that still remember you.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
So you did a good job.
Anyway, you know, back then or, you know, even recent history, we would refer to it as the greater Wenatchee area, or perhaps Wenatchee, or I remember the phrase East Side was used frequently in print and on the radio to describe what is essentially the East Wenatchee area. And today I have noticed, and this is both in print and in the spoken word, people increasingly using the phrase Our Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't mean the Our Valley, Our Future Development Initiative. They're talking about Our Valley.
It's our domicile. It's
yeah,
our place.
One community, one place. And so I think just that in itself has been a huge success story. in how that's changed over the last few years.
And also it takes the expanded vision so you don't think, well, we don't have these problems in Kashmir, so what's the difference?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
And, that
know,
doesn't fly.
Something else, and this is more for people from outside the region. You know, you'll have people who will check out Wenatchee Valley or the greater Wenatchee area or what we're calling now our valley, and they'll look at the city of Wenatchee and they'll see that there's roughly 30,000-35,000 people living within the city limits. But if you include the entire our valley area, you're talking about, you know, upwards to 100,000 people. And that changes people's perception of this area, and I think in a good way, too.
Because you can't just say, we have our happy little town and here's the city limits. That's not the way it works.
No, and it's, you know, again, you know, you can't deny the fact there is a river coming through the town. You can't deny the fact that there's two, you know, at least in the Wenatchee, greater Wenatchee area, you got the city of Wenatchee, city of East Wenatchee, Chelan County, Douglas County, Eastmont School District, Wenatchee School District, two port districts, two PUDs. Those are all great and they do a great job, but it is one community, and I think people who live here view it that way.
Probably the people who represent all the district organizations you just mentioned realize that they have to work together. The two ports must work together.
Yeah, and I think
two county commissions have to work together.
And I think it's also in part driven by the challenges, you know, we face as a community. And these are many of these challenges are not locally generated. They're more, you know, kind of global kind of things that are occurring. You know, impacts our industries. It impacts our way of life here. And so you want to be you want to be working together as one to take those on.
One of the conclusions that you came to last year was that the Valley is the secret to the future of the Valley. What we have already right here is the foundation in the future of our financial success, our societal success, our success as a community to thrive.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we truly are blessed. We have, whether you're talking about our existing industries here, like the agriculture industry or the medical industry, our hydroelectric facilities, our recreation and tourism industries, the beauty of this place, the size, you know, it's a great size. People still know each other here. You go into a larger metro area, and we're considered a small metro area now. But if you go into a large metro area, you don't have that. You don't have that real sense of community.
You're not likely to see someone you know downtown.
Yeah. I mean, you just aren't. You know, in a big city, because I came from Portland. I've lived in big cities. You know your neighbors. You know people who you work with and, you know, any family members. But that's about it. You know, it's just not the same. And because of that, we're blessed and we have many, many advantages because of that.
Your organization, Our Valley, Our Future, has made some suppositions, got together with people who can help with the decision-making, come up with game changers in virtually every element of the society that you outlined, like how do we prosper? How do we plan? How do we grow? These are big questions that I don't know if they ask themselves in New York. How are we going to grow? How are we going to become more of a big city? Or how are we going to become a different big city? Well, we have to ask similar questions. What's going to happen to our municipal area? How can we control better our fate and the fate of the people who live here?
Correct.
And a lot of people have given you their answer, their opinion, and more than that, their time to put together some answers. Ever been surprised by an answer?
No, because I think, you know, much of what we do is it originated with the grassroots, you know, and people are smart, and collectively they're even smarter. And so things that people have told us, everything we do is, values-based. So we want to capture what people here value, what people here want this place to be in 10, 15, 20 years.
And let that temper how we attack the future us.
You'll see in our, what we call our action plan. There's a lot of programs and projects in there. They're all meant to be value-added, not meant to duplicate or replicate what anybody else is doing here. But if you look at those, you'll see many of them are based on our existing assets. And by assets, I mean industries, but I also mean our physical assets, like our foothills, our mountains, our lakes, our community. And so it's building on those things rather than, you know, necessarily trying to go out and find something shiny and new and bringing it here. You know, that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to build on what's here and also the decades and decades of work and time and resources that have been devoted to this place.
You've earned a lot of support from the community in terms of tell us what you think about these things, which sounds like a just a placation. Tell us what you think. You know, be sure to send me an email.
Yeah.
But in reality, you've got to, you bring in community leaders to really find out what the problem is and how it can be dealt with.
The thing we did, you know, we went out originally and we talked to, I think it was close to 5,000 people, and they answered, you know, again, these five main questions that I mentioned. One was, what do you value most about living here? What do you see as this region or community's greatest strength, greatest weakness? What do you see as our future challenges? And what, finally, what one vision idea you have? And because we got such a large response, and we were able to then take that information and convert it into actual projects and programs that have what we call lead partners. So, you know, we went out and recruited lead partners, and they're a combination of public, private, and nonprofit sector folks or organizations. It gives this thing really teeth, and it also goes back to what people originally told us. And so, there's real power in that. And it truly, because it's so broad, it is making things better for everybody here, and not just a certain segment of the community.
When you come to a question like, how do we live and care for one another? You make these recommendations, and for people who have never read this online, I invite you to do them, because there's a game changer under every headline. Mm-hmm. What's the one thing we could do to make a game changer? And your headline underneath, how do we care and live for one another, is alleviate generational poverty. Now, that's a big step.
It's huge.
But you probably came to the conclusion that without that step, nothing else would follow it.
Correct. And, you know, and we do have, again, everything in there is based on what we were told, based on what this place is, and not to dance around the subject, but there is a lot of generational poverty here, and it goes back decades. We're not talking about, you know, the last 5 years or 10 years. We're going back decades, this generational poverty that has existed here. And so there's a lot of different components of that. It's a very complicated issue, but I think a community that hides from those kind of things is a community that ultimately is going to suffer down the road. You've got to take on your challenges, and you've got to try to make things better.
Is education the first step out of generational poverty?
I think that's part of it. I think it's also, you know, job skills. I think it's, you know, it's early learning. It's housing. It's transportation. It's a lot of different things. One thing you'll see that we've done with our Value Our Future is that, you know, again, we haven't just focused on jobs, the economy. A lot of communities do brainstorming, visioning, you know, projects, and they'll focus on those kind of things. We focused on everything from jobs to healthcare to education to poverty to, you know, arts and culture, outdoor recreation, the environment. It's all in there. And if you really think about it from a big picture standpoint, things are all interrelated. And so when you bring up the issue of poverty, you know, poverty is poverty, but there's a lot of components of that. And so our thinking or our approach from the beginning was, if we can raise the tide for all boats, then we're going to be, everybody's going to benefit, all these different areas.
Because it eliminates so many of the negatives or the slow-moving aspects of a society.
Correct.
And I guess the hardest step would be when you come to a conclusion like that, mm-hmm. How do you get action to take place? How do you get the next step? Or is that the purpose?
I think one of the things we did that, again, a lot of communities don't do is that we went out and sought and recruited lead partners for all these different projects and programs we have, initiatives. And by doing that, these lead partners, you know, said, yeah, we'll take that on and we'll work on it and we'll work on it, you know, until it's completed. And so this isn't something that, again, folks sat around a table or that we did all this community outreach and everybody came up with these great ideas and everybody said, you know, wow, that's wonderful. We took the next step and we really made it, made these things actions rather than just visions.
A lot of people talk about the housing shortage, but when you examine it under the microscope, you say that, well, this has been going on for a long time. And the aspect for the future doesn't look all that interesting mm-hmm. if we keep doing it this way.
Right.
So you came up with the idea of a lot of different ways to build affordable housing mm-hmm. and nice housing.
Yeah. You know, interesting.
Good neighborhood housing.
Yeah. You know, we came out with our housing recommendations. This was a group again. I facilitated this group.
Where will we live?
Yeah, it was about 35 folks, broad cross-section of the housing industry and the community, the overall region, and they spent about 900 hours over about 10 months working on this, researching, coming up with these recommendations. And, you know, so some of it's kind of, you know, if you look at the recommendations, you know, they're very particular and detailed, but the overall report has attracted a lot of attention, not just in this community, but outside the community. And some of the construction work you're seeing now in the community where people are adding rental units, for instance, are a result of folks, developers, finding out through this report that there was a housing need here. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's things like that that are occurring that may not be really obvious to folks, but those are the kind of things that do happen when you can bring people together. People can leave their own agendas at the door, and you move forward and you come up with a plan. You know, I've talked to a lot of folks since this report came out, people who are both inside and outside the housing industry, and they've gone through it. They've been pretty impressed by it, and they've said, you know, one of the things I've noted is that it's obvious that people compromised. You know, and again, this group that we had that worked on this was, when I say the housing industry, I'm not just talking about builders and developers, but we also had, you know, and realtors. We also had bankers. We had low-income housing experts. We had architects. We had landlords. You know, we had everybody involved. And if you go through these recommendations, you'll look at one and you'll say, you know, that's probably not what the development industry totally wanted. But then look at these other recommendations. You know, they probably did want these others. And so I think that's how you develop a good plan, you know, a community plan that everybody can ultimately sign off on, is that, you know, going in, you're not going to get everything if you're a developer or if you're a low-income housing person, but you can get something that will make things better for you. And then the overall effect of that is really good for the overall community.
In fact, this state of Washington put together 28,000 new jobs last month, half of them in construction.
Yeah, I didn't see that, but I'm not surprised.
That came out late.
No, we still have a lot of work to do here when it comes to housing. I saw, I think it was yesterday, there was the Pacific Appraisals report came out, and statistically things have not changed much compared to a year ago, which means we're still in, you know, housing crunch situation. Some people use the word housing crisis. And so, but things are getting better. And I think, for instance, one thing in that report, it showed that the vacancy rate here is still basically the same. Whenever you get a low, low vacancy rate, that's, you know, one of the reasons why you see, increased housing prices. But I think that's going to change the more we get more building. And I think the reason it hasn't changed much over the past year is, that there was a lot of folks here who were doubling up or doing creative things to find a place to live. And as new places have been built, they're starting to fill those, but it hasn't really impacted the vacancy rate yet because there was all this, again, you know, people. And I've, when we did our housing report, we did a survey, and we heard from a lot of folks here who were, again, either doubling up, you know, some cases an adult family moving back in with their parents, just because they couldn't find a place either to live or couldn't afford it. And so we had a lot of that, and we still do, but I think that is starting to ease, and that's why you're seeing why the stats haven't changed much.
See, that concept of doubling up is something I might not have ever thought of on my own, but there it is, a factor in sort of like the hidden demographics of the housing shortage.
Yeah, and you know, if you drive around town, you don't know who's living where, and so you would not know that, but that's something that has been going on here for at least several years now.
And how could a developer or someone who builds houses for a living not know that we had a housing shortage? Well, he just didn't know.
Yeah.
He was probably busy somewhere else, and now he does know.
And something we also found out when we did this work, this research that led to this report and the recommendations, is that we've had some, you know, great builders who have been here for, frankly, some of them decades. And they, you know, typically put up anywhere from maybe 10 to 20 houses a year. What we needed to have happen here was more immediate and larger, you know, because we have such a built-up demand. And so many of the builders who are here, who, again, do great work, they're not either capable or interested in putting up, you know, 300 apartments. And so to attract folks from outside the area to come in here and do that, you do need something like what we produced.
When we come back, by the way, Steve Maher is our very special guest. He's the man behind the website and the organization called Our Valley, Our Future. You can go there right now and check out what the valley will look like in the future in terms of the way we're attacking the problems. When we come back, I want to ask him about some of the new projects that he and the members of our community and other folks around town have come up with for the future And starting in 2019, what can it look like? Here, we'll go over some of those plans with Steve at the lead right after these words.
You're listening to The Agenda.
9645. That's DRIVE to 79645.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 6:39 in News Radio 560 K. 6:39, 12:39. Well, I get up early. The first hour is 6. That's all I know. I'm still apparently stretching and yawning. At any rate, the time is 12:39. My very special guest is Steve Maher from Our Valley, Our Future, and we're going to accelerate our interview technique here and let Steve talk about some of the new projects that are coming in that are being reviewed, because you guys take an equal look at all new projects. If someone thinks that they can make a go of a business or an idea or a development, you see how it could play out and how it could be, well, what's the upside and what's the downside and what's the community think?
Yeah. So, when we first started this, community visioning and development initiative, we told, everybody here that this thing would change over time. The plan would change as projects get completed and as, the place itself, you know, changes and evolves. And so, we didn't do that the first year, but, beginning this year, and this all kind of happened last year, where there was some of your listeners may have participated in our survey. We had 6 new projects that we kind of offered up, to the community and asked for feedback, asked folks to see, you know, what they thought of these, if they thought it was a high priority for the community, and just also, you know, would they ever use anything like this? And so, and then there was, we did a public forum down at PIBUS, that where we had all 6 folks, or organizations get up and present. We had about, I think, 80 or 90 people showed up at that, and there's a lot of questions, so there was good feedback there. Ultimately, the Our Valley, Our Future, core team, which is the steering committee for the group, decided to add all 6 projects, to our action plan. And, I'm just gonna list these real quickly, and I guess we can go over them a little bit further. But one is, the Upper Valley, that being the Leavenworth area, a community recreation center, for that place. There's a big need up there, and, they don't have anything like that right now. Another one is, a Haran Natural Area. That's the area between, Confluence State Park and, Walla Walla Point Park, to make some improvements there. If anybody who's been down there recently, there's been, basically some flooding in there that's brought in a lot of silt and dirt. And
flooding from last year or this year?
Yeah, it's been going on for a number of years. And so, used to have a really, dedicated wildlife area there with ponds and that attracted both wildlife and had different plant life. And a lot of
wet
those
water.
Ponds, yeah, all those, not all of them, but many of the ponds have filled up. And so, we felt that was a really good one. Another one is a whitewater park on the Wenatchee River. This came from the Chelan County Department of Natural Resources, as well as a nonprofit group called the Wenatchee River Alliance. And they want to conduct a feasibility study to identify locations for a possible whitewater park along the Wenatchee River. And so they're starting to work on that. And no locations have been identified. I mean, obviously, you've got environmental issues with a whitewater park, although other whitewater parks around the country, if you design them a certain way and I guess design them well, you can actually improve fish habitat. Mm. You know, it depends on how you do it.
And they exist elsewhere and in Europe, too, I think.
Yeah, and so you can do a pretty good job with these. Something like this, for instance, I'm just – toss out, you know, maybe up in the Kashmir Dryden area somewhere, would be a boon for those, for a place like Kashmir. There's one down in Bend, Oregon, that there's a whitewater park down there. And I think, if I can recall, that whitewater park attracts about 500,000 people a year.
Wow.
And so, it could be a good economic, boon for a place like Kashmir if something like this were to happen.
Well, what's been the reaction to that? What's your feedback?
It was really good. You know, there were people, again, who, when we went out and talked to folks about it, there were concerns that were brought up about the environmental impact of doing a whitewater park. But, again, I think a lot of folks didn't have the knowledge of how something like that could be built to actually improve something like fish habitat. And so if this were to go through, obviously there would be a big community comment period, and you'd have to, you know, educational component to it. So, But we felt our valley, our future felt that that fit, again, a lot of our strategies and our overall goals to improve this place for all. So that was another one we added. We also added a Latino business development program, small business development program. This one's got some really interesting lead partners on it. It includes the Port of Chelan County, the Wenatchee Valley Chamber, the Hispanic Chamber, WSU Cooperative Extension, Wenatchee Valley College have all agreed to be lead partners on this. Kevin Overbay, who's the Chelan County Commissioner, is one of the big proponents of this, and he did some research and found out that, and I'm not exactly sure whether this was just Chelan County or if it was both counties, but roughly, right now, roughly 50% of all small businesses started by members of our Hispanic community fail within the first year, and there's a lot of different reasons for that. Some of it's cultural, some of it is, you know, regulation areas, and so the idea is to try to boost that number because obviously we want businesses to succeed here. The more businesses succeed, the more people are employed, you know, more people have discretionary incomes, and so that's a good thing.
So it's not just an idea of being undercapitalized. There's more factors.
And the idea behind this thing is mostly mentorship. You know, it's, there's the feeling that, both, you know, businesses that have been here for a while, successful businesses, can help, these folks as they, you know, embark on a new business, and I think that's a good thing. And our valley thought that was as well.
It's the same way that a chamber of commerce can help somebody new to town.
Correct. Correct.
And if you're from a minority group, yeah, where you're more reliant on the guy you know down the, yeah, street than a bank.
Right. And the fact is, you know, this area, if you look at the migration patterns and demographics, we have a lot of first and second generation Hispanic families here. And as opposed to Yakima, which has, you know, more third and fourth generations. And obviously, if you go into California, it's fifth, sixth, seventh generations.
Yes.
And so, again, you have a lot of folks who are maybe not as savvy or maybe not as aware of regulations and how you operate a business. And so business failures are never good for anybody. They're not good for, obviously, the the person who owns that business and the employees, but also they're not good for the overall community.
So non-traditional and traditional means of business support when you do a startup,
yeah,
would be available.
And I think mentorship is huge,
yeah,
frankly. And so that's what that's all about. Another one of the projects we added to the plan, and this one is in existence, but they want to expand it, and it's called Every Kid at the PAC. And that's to essentially improve the quality of life for underprivileged kids by offering them access to artists and performances so they can see particularly kids who may be inclined to head down that same path, what's possible. And it gives them hope. It gives them an idea of what they can do with their own lives. And so the Performing Arts Center has been doing this program for, I think, at least 3 or 4 years. It's been very successful. It's primarily focused on the two school districts here, as well as, I think, the Quincy School District and maybe Cashmere. And they want to expand it to include more school districts.
It's amazing how a kid who's never been in a theater in his life sees his future before, mm-hmm, him when he sees it, what goes on stage, what goes on with the lights,
yeah,
and the action.
Finally, we also added another project, and it was a Sustainable Wenatchee project. That's a new nonprofit in the community, started by folks here, and it's their whole intent is to educate and inspire residents and businesses to reduce their impact on the environment at the individual level. And so one of the things that we were pretty excited about is the fact that they are in the process of creating a resource page for residents and businesses to go to and to find out how they can do that. I think there's, you know, I guess if you're, you know, if you've been doing something like that for years, you probably know where to go. But a lot of folks who maybe haven't done, you know, haven't recycled or haven't done certain things to improve, you know, the environment, maybe not know how to do it or how to go about it, where to go, where to find out more. And so one of the things they're doing is creating this resource page, which I think is a big benefit for the entire community. Nobody else, there's nothing like that that exists now here. So that's a good thing too. So those are 6 new projects we added. And again, you know, this plan is supposed to, our effort is supposed to change and evolve over time. We've had about of the original projects in the plan, again, starting in 2017, I think it's about 15 or 16, close to 20% have been completed already. So things are happening here. And that gets back to the lead partners that I mentioned earlier, you know, the importance of having lead partners and taking things on and seeing them to fruition. Just like these six new projects I just listed, they all have lead partners.
Who comes forward? What sort of company or person or individual says, I'll be your lead partner?
You know, it's a combination of people reaching out to us and also Our Valley, Our Future, utilizing all the grassroots and community outreach work we've done to know who could make a good lead partner. So it's a combination of both, and it's that interaction back and forth.
And they become the pitch man for the project. They say, look, this is happening, and look what we've achieved so far, and here's where we're going.
Yeah, and if they also, one of the other things we did was we set up a grants program through the Community Foundation. The Community Foundation and United Way both went out and together, another good example of collaboration. Community Foundation and United Way went out and landed a Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation grant, and that money all goes to Our Valley's lead partners. Doesn't go to Our Valley's operations or anything like that. It goes to our lead partners. And so over the past 2 years, we've been awarding these grants to lead partners. And if you go through our plan, you'll see that there are some big organizations here who are lead partners, like the City of East Wenatchee, City of Wenatchee, the Port Districts, the College. But there are also some lead partners that are, you know, way smaller and don't have the resources that some of our big agencies and organizations here do. And so that's where most of this money, this grant money has gone to. There are, again, organizations, lead partners that need help to either get their project going or to push it over the top.
Steve Maher, the man behind Our Valley, Our Future, is our very special guest today. We'll come back and underline that phrase that we started the show with. The future is not a constant. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ. The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
Just got a couple minutes to spend with our very special guest, Steve Maher from Our Valley, Our Future. The interesting thing about all the projects that we've discussed today is some came over the transom, some were started by city leaders, some have been considered by citizens over the years. But the end result is with committee work and with stakeholders and with what we call the game changers all in place, you've made a lot of progress, especially finding out what people really want and what people think. And what they want is for this place to stay pretty much the same without destroying anything that we value and still allow growth so that we can manage it.
Yeah, you know, that's something else I didn't mention earlier, but one of the big reasons why this whole thing was started, the Our Valley Initiative, was to do what we could to preserve the quality of life that exists here now. We are very, very close to the Seattle metropolitan area, the Puget Sound area, and anybody who lives over there now knows that place is becoming increasingly unlivable for transportation, housing, a lot of different reasons. And, you know, common sense tells you that there's going to be an influx here. And so not that the hordes are going to overrun the place, but still, you know, you've got to be thinking about those kind of things. And what can we do to put in place and kind of cement, you know, these things that are really great for us and make this already a great place to live.
And there are other cities in the West that are teetering on the brink of being unworkable.
Yeah. You know, and it's so much more powerful when we all work together as one. Getting back to what I mentioned earlier, you know, about, you know, one community. Our Valley is about one community. We're about efficiencies. We're about resiliency. If we all row together, you can make really great progress and make good things can happen.
Steve Maher, Our Valley, Our Future. I wish we had more time, but what I'll do is I'll just invite you back, and then we will have more time, a whole other 45 minutes. 12:56, Steve Maher's my guest. We have to say adios for now.
Thank you.
Real homes, making real estate real.